Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You're tuned into Homo Ground, same ground, different sound. My name is Maya McDonald, and today's episode features my conversation with LA-based songwriter and performer Tara Lopez of Rituals of Mine. We recently caught up via telephone to discuss her evolution as an artist and her thoughts on what's coming next. A new 3-song EP, Sleeper Hold, is out now on Car Park Records. Many thanks to Tara. Find Rituals of Mine everywhere. Spotify, Twitter, Instagram, ritualsofmine.com, so on and so forth. Right now, let's get into it.
This is Tara.
This is Maya. Where are you right now?
I'm in Sacramento right now. I leave for tour tomorrow. So I've just been up here for rehearsals. My drummer lives in San Francisco, so Sacramento is kind of like our little halfway point.
Nice. What does your rehearsal usually entail? Do you have to do like a lot of stretching? I feel like your live show is so dynamic.
I actually do a lot of stretching. Actually, we're kind of learning new material right now. So not kind of, we are learning new material. So it's just like really just rehearsing some of these new songs and just creating an entire new set along with like, we have a lighting designer for the first time. Her name is Lex and she's awesome. And so kind of just like figuring out the entire set, lighting, sound, all of it.
Wow. I remember last time I saw you, which was maybe at Treefort, you did have some pretty epic lighting at that point. So I'm thrilled to hear that you have even gone further on that end.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's, you know, it's something where we really take our live show seriously. And for me, that's the most, I don't know, that's where I feel like I'm able to express myself the most. So we just try to refine every single tour and make it just a little bit more dynamic and just different. So then that way for fans who have seen us a bunch of times, it's a brand new set every time.
What kind of discussions do you have with your lighting designer? I'm curious. I've never had that kind of artistic discussion with someone.
It's actually really cool. And it's the last time, it's been an emotional experience, which is super unexpected. But, you know, lighting, I think, is something that has really helped me feel more comfortable on stage. And it's been a way of expressing ourselves and emotions through light and through, I don't quite know how to explain it, but it's been really incredible finding someone who gets the songs on such an emotional level and is able to translate that into something really powerful. It's been really incredible, especially with these new songs. Like, you know, we're learning them musically. I'm learning how to sing in them, but then also to feel comfortable on stage in the environment that she is creating for us it's been a really powerful experience. So it's cool to kind of create the aesthetic and make sure that we're, you know, anytime that we want to bring people into our world, we're now able to kind of create that in any venue that we play, you know, whether it's a small, tiny, like dive bar to a large theater, like we're able to create that world. And that's something that's always been really important to us. And she's helping us actually make that happen.
I love that kind of focus because I often think about how an artist has a certain amount of time on the stage and they can do anything they want with that time and that space. And I feel like it can often go kind of underutilized.
Yeah. And that's always been a big fear of mine. For me, it's just like the live show is the opportunity to really connect with the fans and for us to connect with the songs as well. And so it's like, you know, you have 30, 45 minutes up there to really kind of express yourself through these songs in a way that I have yet to really feel like I'm able to translate that on a recording. So the live show is our place to put it all out there. And for me, it's super rewarding to see people getting drawn into that world and see, you know, grown men in tears, which is really powerful, or, you know, people like singing their hearts out or laughing, smiling, dancing, like all of these different emotions, and to be able to look out into the crowd and see that. That's like what I always hope we can bring to people, is just that hopefully that this resonates. And so for the full package to kind of be that is super important to us.
I was going to ask about energy exchange between you and your fans, because I feel like both in the intensity of your live show and in like your general openness and vulnerability, it kind of offers people a chance to connect in that way, it seems like.
Yeah, you know, I just think it's so important, and it's scary. It's definitely scary, especially nowadays, social media. It's a lot of work to be vulnerable, and I feel like it's a lot of work to be present online and to, you know, just put yourself out there every single day. But I think it's very rewarding, and it's something where I have found it has given me the motivation to continue going in the industry is by having fans connect and come up to me at shows and talk about, you know, mental health or talk about insecurities, talk about just, you know, like how our music or is able to keep them going, or how, you know, like me sharing my journey with mental health or, you know, suicide prevention has helped them in their own ways. So it's pretty remarkable. And it continues to keep me open anytime that I'm feeling insecure, like, oh God, maybe I share too much. But then to hear like the feedback and that it's actually helping other folks, like, I'm like, okay, this is what I'm meant to do and I'm going to keep doing it. It's just, it kind of, yeah, it, to me, that's success. To me, that's like the type of energy exchange that I want to have with people while I'm doing this is to be 100% authentic. And it's for everyone to feel really comfortable and safe at our shows and safe in music in general.
I was going to ask you what your definition of success is here in 2019, and it sounds like that's part of it. To me, that's something that's always kind of shifting because it's a really strange business to be in.
It is. This industry is so wild, and I definitely feel, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with it. Because,
yeah.
You know, and I feel like a lot of us do because it's so hard. It's really, really difficult. Every single day I feel like is a fight and a struggle. And especially, you know, being queer, being brown, being a woman, like there's so many different layers to it. So to me, success in an industry that honestly bases so much of, you know, success is paired with numbers and followers and growth and likes and streams and all of this stuff, which can be so, it feels like a rat race at times. To me, success is, again, like looking out into the crowd and seeing people crying, looking out into the crowd and seeing people smiling, coming, you know, having folks come up to me afterwards saying, you know, your songs have kept me alive, or your songs, I got your lyrics tattooed onto my body and I look at them every single day, like, and it, that keeps me going. Like, that to me, I have to view that as success, because at the end of the day, I think about legacy a lot. And I think about, you know, if I were to die tomorrow, is anyone really going to care how many Instagram followers this project has? No, you know,
yeah,
like there's not, that's not, that's so irrelevant. But if, you know, like this music touched people, or if these lyrics meant anything, or if, you know, me stopping and taking the time after a show to talk to someone or sign something, if that's going to be what people remember, then that's success. You know, that has to be success.
Are you hearing from any younger artists, maybe underrepresented artists, who are maybe seeing themselves in a way through you finally?
Yeah, and that's success too. And that's wild to me, and probably the most rewarding is actually... So I'm in Sacramento, like I was saying, and it's my hometown, and it's where I grew up and really taught myself how to sing and perform. And I spent, you know, countless years here playing so many shows on like street corners and cafes and basements, and, you know, really built a foundation here. And so it was my first night back. I was just walking down the street, just kind of, you know, just taking it all in. And I was stopped a number of times by younger artists, a couple of musicians, and then there were a couple of queer painters actually. And all of them were saying, like, just so stoked that I was home, that I was here, like spending my time here. And a lot of the feedback was like, you know, you are the reason why we're doing this, or, you know, like, we are inspired by your work. And so that's inspiring our work. And I just think that that's like the coolest thing. And I think like that's what we're supposed to be doing here, is just like inspiring each other. Cause I remember growing up, I didn't really have that many, you know, queer artists to look up to, especially not locally. So it's just so rad to be able to like have any kind of impact.
I'm always really curious about artistic identities and naming and that kind of thing. And I'm curious what shifted for you creatively, or like maybe ethos wise, when you changed your name to Rituals of Mine.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been under the name Sister Crayon for years and loved it, loved all that it brought, all that it took me. But I felt like it was, you know, when I first started the project, it was supposed to just be a funny alter ego back in 2008, like my rap ego. Like it was a joke, really. And then it turned into this like serious band and a serious project that was getting some traction. And, you know, the lineup changes over the years just had been so immense that in 2015, my father passed away. He died by suicide. And then six months later, my best friend died in an accident. And I just felt this immense, you know, after these losses, I just felt like I don't want to continue this project name. This was how my father and my best friend had known me for so long under the Sister Crayon name. And I just did not feel that I wanted to continue the name if they couldn't be there. And so for me, I felt like I need to put this name to rest along with them. And that is going to be this time capsule that will forever be with them. And quite honestly, I just felt like I wanted to start something new, something fresh, and have a clean slate. So then that way, not only with that heavy, you know, baggage of what I had just gone through, but I also wanted to create a new sound that I've always envisioned, but kind of felt like I couldn't under the Sister Crayon moniker.
You reposted this quote recently on Instagram by someone named Sev Dalisa that really resonated with me. Can I read part of it here? I wanted to ask you about it.
Yeah, please.
This is just the abridged version, but quote, "There's nothing more glorious on the face of the earth than someone who refuses to give up, who refuses to give in to their most self-hating, discouraged, disillusioned self, and instead learns slowly and painfully how to relish the feeling of building a hut in the middle of the suffocating dust." That one really struck a chord with me. And I think a lot of people, cause I'm like deep into meme therapy. So that I'm looking for those road signs always. But I mean, you did just touch on it a bit, but how does that sentiment speak to or reflect your experience?
Oh man. As soon as I saw that, it kind of took my breath away as soon as I read that quote. And I think, you know, Sev Dalisa is just always putting out so much wisdom, but when I read that, it was, I too feel that, you know, the things come as we need them. I really do believe that. And I believe, as maybe as corny as it sounds, but it's so true, that signs come when we absolutely need them, and that the universe provides whatever that means. It just does. And time again, all throughout my life, I've had moments like that. And, you know, I was really, really feeling down, just overwhelmed. Every single day in this industry, I feel like there's more obstacles that come, and I'm a pretty resilient person, but I was feeling very, very discouraged. And as soon as I read that quote, it immediately just locked everything in again and just kind of reset my motivation and my energy towards, you know, what I'm supposed to be doing here. And so I just think that it's so true. There is nothing more beautiful than seeing a person, you know, just completely unwilling to give up on what they're passionate about, on what their dream is. And I think resiliency is one of the most beautiful, most attractive qualities. I just think, to me, I almost kind of want to get that tattooed onto my body just so that it can be reminded every single time when I need it, when I feel discouraged. But I think, you know, it was really beautiful. As soon as I reposted it, I realized just how much we're all feeling this way. It resonated so profoundly with folks. And I think it's really easy when you're feeling down or discouraged to forget that you're not alone in this feeling. We're actually all somewhat feeling this way, just on different levels, different extremes. So it was really beautiful to kind of share that and to see the responses that people had towards it. It just made me feel a lot less alone and in that more motivated to keep going.
moments like that feel like the brighter side of social media in 2019.
Yeah, totally. And I think that it's super important to remember that there are so many incredible aspects about social media. Of course, there's negatives, but exactly, like those are the times where I'm like, this is amazing. Like, we're all able to connect simultaneously over one idea and remember and that we're not alone in these feelings, that we're able to actually share in real time that we're feeling the same way. And that was like a really beautiful chain of exchanging energy.
This episode of Homo Ground was made possible by our Patreon supporters, Adriana Martinez, Ashley Amon, Brian Shields, Chris Lane, Corey, Critical Explorers of Future Societies, D, Jordan La Liaison, Joseph Martin, Kim Baglieri, Lucenti, Lucy, Michael Bacon, Queer Public, and Willard Joyce. If you would like to support Homo Ground and are able to financially, head over to homoground.com/Patreon.
We spoke a bit about your live show at the beginning of the conversation, and I know you're about to head out on tour. Maybe we should talk about the record a little bit.
Yeah. Cool.
It's called Sleeper Hold. It's coming out like next week, week after on Car Park.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
October 4th?
October 4th.
How many songs is it?
You know, it's short. It's only going to be 3.
Nice.
And it's a short teaser into the full length album. But I'm really, really excited about it. The full length album is going to be completely all new material. But Sleeper Hold is, an EP that I wanted to release that kind of is a time capsule of the last 3 years of my life. And I really felt like it just needed to be its own statement. And I'm really, really excited about it. It's, the significance of the title is basically just how I felt grief and loss had made me feel. I felt like I was, honestly in a sleeper hold for the last three and a half years of my life. And so I just really wanted to touch on that feeling. And I hope that it resonates with others who are feeling the same way.
What is your recording process like, or that side of things? We talked a lot about the feelings and the intention and the show. I'm curious what part of the making of the recorded works feels good to you, or what the process is.
It's been really fun because over the last year and a half, I finally, for the first time in my adult life, had a recording studio of my own called Bitchwave Studios. And it was a really huge step for me, but it proved to be like the best thing that I could have done, which was basically just kind of take over my own space. And instead of, trying to get time somewhere else or scrounge up money to like go to another studio, I built my own studio with my longtime producer, Wes Jones. And we kind of just holed up in this, in the space and created the EP pretty quickly. And it's where we also have recorded at least half of what's going to be the next album in it as well. And so for us, when we first started working together, Wes was living in St. Augustine, Florida. So we would, plan trips once or twice a year and kind of work together on there. And then through, just sharing ideas through email and whatnot. But last year, Wes moved out to Los Angeles. So we were able to really hone in and finish our ideas. And Heavyweight was the first track that we started for Sleeper Hold and kind of just went from there. But it was really awesome and really empowering working in my own studio and in my own space and kind of feeling like we had all of the time that we needed to really hone in on what we wanted to create and not feel this immense pressure of like, oh my God, we have a couple hours here, or we booked this room for only X amount of time. Like, it felt really organic and there was a lot of freedom in that.
I'm curious if there are any challenges in terms of suddenly being in the same place. Like, sometimes it's easier for me to be more vulnerable in my writing when I am sending things to someone via email.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I like to work alone primarily, at least in the writing process, because, I want to be able to make mistakes and to sing off key if I need to, or to completely, just mess up. And so the initial stages of writing, I have to absolutely be alone. It's very rare when I'm in the room with someone else. But then from there, it feels really good to be able to go share an idea through email, kind of pick that apart and dissect it, and then meet up with Wes. And we kind of just bounce each other, bounce ideas off of each other from there. But it definitely was an adjustment for sure, because, even though we've been working together since 2013, 2012, we've always just kind of had these little chunks of time together where it's been, it'll be like, all right, cool, see you in, 6 months and we'll work together for a few days and that's kind of it. But now it's like awesome, we're going to meet up once a week and work together. And there was definitely an adjustment period there of more of just like, okay, wow, we actually have like a consistent game plan.
You mentioned Bitchwave Studio, and I've been wearing the Bitchwave sweatshirt everywhere, and I get a lot of questions about it. So now's my chance to ask you to distill the Bitchwave message. What's the elevator pitch for Bitchwave so I know how to accurately describe this project or this entity?
Yeah, Bitchwave, you know, Bitchwave, we're creating Bitchwave. It's an ever-evolving concept and collective. It's a mood. It's a movement. And basically all that it is we are just trying to create space for those that the industry, you know, have never really created space for. And basically all that we're trying to do is create environments, whether it's, you know, pop-ups or a collective or a label, which we have big plans for. Really, it's just to help support, highlight, and uplift marginalized folks in this industry. And I, you know, we started Bitchwave kind of accidentally, which was because Lauren Ross, who is my partner in this, had an album with her project La Luma, and she wanted to release it. And I was just like, hey, let's just release it on our own. Let's just start this. And I had the name Bitchwave for a while in the back of my mind, and was just like, I want to use this. I want to create this space where we can really support one another and not feel like we're pitted against each other, or there's limited resources, or there's just like a mentality of lacking something. And so, you know, that's our goal. And it's, again, ever evolving and growing steadily. Our goal is just to create space for marginalized folks to feel like they have a home or they have a support system.
Can you tell me what it meant to you to make the Burst video?
Yeah, oh my gosh. That was seriously one of the best experiences that I've had doing music. It was such a beautiful process of friends and new friends, old friends coming together to really show support for this project. And I still feel overwhelmed by it. We had a very, you know, like a small budget, and somehow pulled it off. And the only reason why we were able to pull it off is because so many incredible people came together and, you know, offered their talents, their resources, and their passion and their energy. And I'm just, it was a tangible moment for me to actually take a step back and see just how loved and supported this project is. And sometimes when you're just like working, you know, every single day on the project, it's really easy to forget that. It's really easy to feel kind of alone in situations. But that video and that entire process really showed me like, wow, like, this project is loved. And it was just so incredible. We were able to have, you know, friends of ours, queer friends, trans friends, people of color, like just all on deck, all on the crew in the video. And like everyone was able to shine and have their moment. And it was just seriously one of the best days of my life.
I think that's what's so cool about this project is there's so many opportunities for like making a video with that kind of group of people, or, you know, just general advocacy, working on your stage show, working on recordings. Do you feel creatively fulfilled?
I do. I really, really do. And I think the reason why I do is because even though I've loved every moment of this project and every evolution of it, every lineup, I feel like it's finally where I've always hope the project would be, which is when I started it over a decade ago, where it's focused on me writing, just me writing, you know, like obviously Adam is such an incredible bandmate. They are amazing. And they totally take our live show to the next level, like more so than I ever could have imagined. But I think I'm able to, because it's just me and Wes, working in the studio together, I'm able to really feel this creative freedom where when you're writing with other bandmates, sometimes, or at least for me, I always kind of felt a little censored, a little insecure, just because I'm, you know, I don't know, I just felt a little restricted. But now I feel 100% like I can write about my life and kind of feel just very uninhibited in a way that I've never truly felt before. And so I think now having the ability and the resources to work with all of these individuals that I love and that inspire me so much, like Adam, like Wes, like Lex, like Chris, all of these folks who just continuously inspire me with their own stories. I don't know. I just feel like the project is exactly where I've always hoped it would be.
What do you have coming up later this fall and for the rest of the year?
Finishing the album.
Okay.
That is number one priority for me. We're doing a Pacific Northwest and West Coast tour that starts tomorrow. And then we're doing a bunch of EP release shows in California in October and doing some spot dates in November. But all throughout there, really just trying to hone in and finish this album. It's so close. But of course, you know, there's the mixing period is always going to take the longest. But that is our goal, is to really just finish this record.
Thank you for your time and your music and the work you're doing for a lot of people in this industry that have needed someone like you around.
Oh, gosh. Thank you for, you know, taking the time and for caring and honestly for just seeing me. That means a lot.
Many thanks to Tara Lopez. Be sure to check out Rituals of Mine live if you have the opportunity to do so. Their new album is called Sleeper Hold, and it's just a taste of what's in store. This is Maya McDonald for Homoground. I'll see you all next time.
You can't even deny, I stay in your mind.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.